Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling in just a few moments. I'll also let you know the best games of the football weekend, give you some picks later on as well, as the Gamecock season begins this Saturday. Forget the last three games. That doesn't show you, tell you anything. It starts this Saturday with Kentucky coming to town. And speaking of which, don't forget to get your picks in this week. Our weekly Pick'em contest continues. Make your picks by 5 o'clock on Friday, and you could be the winner of a Fan Zone gift card. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to get your picks in today. charlestonsportsradio.com, make your picks by the end of the week. And every week for our weekly Pick'em contest throughout the football season, and give yourself a chance to win a Fan Zone gift card. We'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling in just a few moments. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Before we get to Jay Schill, let's first go to the phones. Jerome is with us. Jerome, what's going on? How are you?
Hey. With all due respect, you know, because I like the Sizzles courts, okay? Remember I told you I met him on the corner of Cannon and King Street one day?
Oh, yeah?
And he walked over to me and shakes my hand, okay? I didn't even have to walk over to him because there are other people on TV. I'm not going to say who they are, but I met them out in public, and they're not that nice of a people, okay? They don't come over to you and shake your hand. They wouldn't get within 10 feet of you, 10 miles of you, okay? And just so, are they going to win again this year, man? Because it ain't looking good.
The Citadel?
I was driving going past the Johnson Hager the other day.
Yeah.
And I was looking over there thinking, are they going to win a game this year, man? I don't know.
Well, they just won Saturday. They just won a game.
Oh, yeah. They did?
Yeah, they beat North Greenville on Saturday.
Oh, okay. North Greenville. Oh, come on, man. Get serious. North Greenville. Okay, well, that answers how bad it is. North Greenville. I don't even know. I didn't even know that.
Ah.
But I wanted to ask you, are the Rams play the Buccaneers this weekend, right?
Yeah.
So are they going to pull an upset? Or does this train keep rolling?
I think the Bucs win. Now, the Rams are home, and they're underdogs. You know, so you got a home dog here in this matchup. But I just think Tampa Bay, I do think they're the better team. And I also, I trust Tom Brady more than I do Matt Stafford. But this is a real test for Stafford.
I knew you were going to say that.
Of course.
I knew you were going to say that. I was going to say, hey, do you trust Stafford? No. Okay. So, all right. So, but, hey, they got a good defense.
Yeah, the Rams, both teams do. The Buccaneers defense hasn't played as well this year as it did last year down the stretch. But they both have a ton of talent on those defenses. I still think the Buccaneers have the more talented team than the Rams, and I think they still have the better quarterback. So I know the Buccaneers are on the road, and they're going out west, but it's always hard to pick against Tom Brady. I think the Buccaneers still win on Sunday.
How is he doing this, man? The man's 44 years old. How is he doing this?
I don't know. Avocado ice cream, that's how.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. How many touchdown passes do you think you could throw at age 44?
Come on, man. I'm older than that, okay? I'm way older than that. There's no way I'd be competing at that age.
Yeah. Well, Tom Brady, that's why he's the greatest of all time. And, Jerome, if we ever actually met in person, I would shake your hand as well. This is actually going to be one of my picks later on this afternoon. Look, the Rams are home dogs. And so when you get a good team like that, getting a point, you know, it's only a point. They're a one-point underdog. But, you know, you get a home dog in a big game like that, when it's that close of a game, my rule always is, you know, take the underdog. Might as well take the points. But in this case, I'm kind of going with my heart over my head, just like Sunday Night Football. And it burned me. You know, the play would have been the Ravens at home, home dog, Sunday Night Football, take the Ravens. But I thought, nah, you got Patrick Mahomes on the other side. They're not going to be able to beat him. And sure enough, they did. Similar case here on Sunday. You know, I think the smarter play is to take the Rams at home as an underdog in a close matchup like this. These are two pretty even teams, but I'm going with my heart here. I just give me Tom Brady over Matt Stafford. And this is a huge test for Stafford. This is the first big test for him with the Rams. How can you match up against the defending Super Bowl champs and a 44-year-old Tom Brady on the other side? You're at home. They're coming to your building. Let's see how well you can play on Sunday, because the Rams, even though they won this past week against the Colts, you know, didn't play all that great. But these, to me, and I've said it all offseason, since the Rams acquired Stafford, I've said these are the two best teams in the NFC. I think on paper, I think they'll end up being the two top seeds. That's not a hot take. So this is a huge game. This could be a preview of, for all we know, maybe the NFC Championship this year. And it'll be out in L.A., and we'll see. But it's just hard to pick against Tom Brady, and he's playing so good right now. I mean, 9 touchdowns in 2 games as a 44-year-old? Granted, 2 bad defenses, Cowboys, Falcons, this will be a bigger test for the Buccaneers. You know, but they've won 10 straight going back to last year. They've found their flow here. Second year in this offense with these players, an actual offseason. Tom Brady will probably only be better this year than last year. And he's playing really well since last year's bye week. It is remarkable what he's doing at 44. And I could throw out all the different numbers. He's on pace to have more touchdowns by the end of this season in his 40s than he had his entire 20s. Right, he's breaking all sorts of records. He is setting all sorts of hits. It's amazing what he's doing. Certainly the greatest of all time, and still playing like one of the best quarterbacks in the league at age 44. The Buccaneers are still the favorite to go win the Super Bowl. I don't think the Buccaneers do win on Sunday, but that's one of the games to watch. I'll give you the top games coming up in just a little bit of this football weekend. And you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. It's also a big week, not only for football. There's a lot of good football games this weekend, especially in college football come Saturday. And so I'll give you our tasty top five in a little bit here on a Wednesday, because this is a quasi-football Friday today. But also a big week for golf, and he talks golf with us every Wednesday here on the show on Twitter at Jay Shill. It's Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert who writes for PGA Magazine, and he's with us now. Good afternoon, Jeremy. How are you?
And you've got some breaking football news you can cover here coming up
on the show. Oh,
as well.
Whoa. What a tease.
Yeah.
I haven't seen I don't think I've seen what you're alluding to. Okay. All right.
A team in your division just made an announcement.
Oh, my goodness.
Who their quarterback is.
Ah, there's the tease. Justin Fields, huh? He's going to get his first start on Sunday. All right.
Mm.
In Cleveland. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, seriously. Luke, this is the best week. It's Ryder Cup week. It's patriotism. It's pageantry. Tomorrow night at 5 Eastern is the opening ceremony. If you have never seen an opening ceremony, folks, please tune in to Golf Channel, even if it's just for 5 minutes. You get guys wearing suits and stuff that they would never wear, and then they have to wear sunglasses because they want the fans to not be looking at the sun, but the players are staring right at the sun. Yeah, it's interesting. it's interesting, Luke, but I can't wait. To me, I know the U.S. is such big favorites, but Europe has had a tendency to make putts, so I can't wait to dive in. But we got to touch on last week first, because I know we always do.
Yes, exactly. So it was what's the name of it? I don't want to screw it up. The Fortinet? Is that it? Fortinet Championship?
I believe the correct pronunciation is Fortinet Championship.
Fortinet Championship. All right. Well, before I butcher it any further, what were your takeaways from this past weekend?
Max Homa finally delivered. He stepped aside from a podcast he was co-hosting, the Get a Grip podcast with Golf Channel's Shane Bacon, saying that it was hurting his mental game. And in the first event after he steps aside from the podcast, he goes out, holds a wedge on number 12, holds a 21-foot birdie putt on the 13th hole, and just starts this run to the finish to surge past Maverick McNealy to get his third PGA Tour win. And this one, I think, is going to satisfy him, because this one's going to last longer. The previous one was immediately overshadowed, sadly, because if you remember, he won in Los Angeles last season at Riviera back in February. He idolized Tiger growing up. Tiger now hosts this event. He got to meet Tiger, shake his hand, get the trophy from him, and then 2 days later, we know what happened. This win, I think, he'll be able to bask in it more. Well-deserved for somebody who's worked his butt off the last half of the year to get his game back in order, and well-deserved.
Yeah, certainly, and gets that win as we now head towards the Ryder Cup here this weekend, talking with Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Shill. Let's run down a few different things with the Ryder Cup, and starting, I guess, with what hopefully doesn't become a big deal. But this whole, what's this COVID envelope contingency plan thing for the Ryder Cup here this week?
Yeah, this one's not fun for anyone. So if somebody gets injured, if for example, Brooks Koepka, who seems to be fine, by the way, with his wrist injury, if he were to re-aggravate it and couldn't go, the other side puts a name in the envelope for the player that has to sit out in that case. They do that every day of the event in that contingency. With only 8 players needed per session and 4 sit-outs on Friday and Saturday in the team portion, the COVID envelope should not be a problem. But if on Sunday somebody should test positive and can't go, there is going to be a COVID envelope where that player who comes from the other team would not be able to go. And everybody tested negative going in, so we're good to go starting the week. But there is a name in the dreaded COVID envelope, if need be, which is not fun for anyone. Let's hope that doesn't happen. There's also no contingency plan if a breakout happens. If it just runs through one of these squads, there's no contingency plan there. So that's that.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't come into play this week as we talk with Jeremy Schilling about the Ryder Cup. What from the viewing at home TV experience, what should be anticipated from that standpoint here as for those trying to watch the Ryder Cup?
Yes, 8 a.m. Friday morning on Golf Channel all day Friday. The first hour of Saturday, 8 to 9 a.m. will be on Golf Channel, then 9 to 7 Eastern time over on NBC, and then noon to 6 p.m. Eastern over on NBC. All of that is simulcasted on digital platforms, and then you can get a featured match over on Peacock. So it's pretty easy. Golf Channel, NBC, and if you're somebody who likes featured matches, Peacock.
How's the Wisconsin weather looking? Is the weather going to be a concern or play a role at all in any of this?
Oh, yes. Whistling Straits, which is an American Lynx course, so it looks like it should be overseas, but it's actually in America. Is going to be, this is played along a lake in Kohler, Wisconsin. I tested Joe on this. Where do you think Kohler, Wisconsin, the name came from?
I have no idea. I couldn't even come up with a guess.
Herb Kohler, the guy who founded Kohler, sinks and toilets.
Oh.
That's where that company is headquartered. Yeah.
Interesting. I never would have come up with that.
Yeah, it's not a name that people think is synonymous with golf. Friday, 75, partly cloudy, chance for a rain shower, winds 10 to 20. Goes down to 47 at night. So they're starting play Saturday morning at 47 degrees.
Jeez.
Saturday, high 67, sun and clouds mixed, 10 to 20 miles per hour. Goes down to 50. Now Sunday, they're starting at 11 a.m. Central, 72. Sunny, some clouds, 10 to 15 mile per hour winds. And this wind changes directions a bunch. And today it's coming from a direction, their practice rounds that they will, in theory, not see during the event, but you never quite know. So weather always a factor at Whistling Straits. Has to keep it out of the bunkers. There's over 1,000 of them. The rough is not big this week. Is not thick. That's a pro U.S. thing. But have to keep it out of the bunkers, especially in team play. They are lethal and will leave you with some very awkward lies and stances.
Getting ready for the Ryder Cup with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert. We like to talk about gambling around here. I'll give some betting picks later for the football weekend. I know you said you had a heads up for those who may be betting on the Ryder Cup on what not to do for this week.
Yes. 'Cause 2 people have asked me about this already. There are some betting websites out there and platforms, this is completely legal stuff, by the way, that have, how does this end up? U.S. win, Europe win, tie. Now, for those who are golf fans, they know this cannot end in a tie, because if Europe gets the 14 points and it ends 14-14, because Europe is the defending champion, they retain the cup. That is a bet about purely score, not outcome. So when you make your bets, and if you're doing something for who has the, which side has more points, just realize that's a point thing, not a who wins the cup thing. It can be very confusing. It's highly unlikely we end up at 14-14. Solheim Cup almost did 2 weeks ago. But it can happen, but people can get confused because there is no tie in the Ryder Cup, yet the score can end in a tie.
I
hope I clarified it.
Yeah, that's good to know. This whole thing begins here coming up this weekend as we sit here on Wednesday. I know you said it's hard to predict, but easy at the same time for this Ryder Cup. What do you mean by that?
We don't know the pairings. This is blind drawing. We will find out tomorrow night during the opening ceremony what are the Friday AM pairings. But what we do know is this. It's about who makes the most putts, and the U.S. has to stay within shouting distance for the eight alternate shot, also known as foursomes, matches. This is the format that has killed the U.S. for years. The U.S. is an overwhelming favorite in every category, Luke. For this Ryder Cup. Overwhelming favorite. They got the best team by far when it comes to world ranking points and strokes gained and wins, and they have the ranked player of the year in Patrick Cantlay, and they have all this stuff. And yet Europe always seems to make the most putts. Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter are captain's picks for a reason, because they make the most putts. So I can't tell you who's going to beat who in a match, but I can tell you that it's about who makes the most putts. It's about who wins alternate shot, and it's about who can keep their partner out of trouble. I will give you two other nuggets of information. Number one, it does seem like Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay will be a pair. That pair has been lethal, lethal in President's Cup play. So watch out for them. Spieth and Justin Thomas, best friends. They were great teammates over at Paris in 2018. And on the European side, their rookies, Victor Hovland, Bernd Wiesberger, Shane Lowry, are all in similar pods. We don't know the pairings, but they're in similar practice and press pods as the other rookies. As with vets on the team. Europe has had a history of pairing rookies with veterans to help even things out. And that, I think, is part of their secret sauce as well. So the guys to watch this week, John Rahm had a stomach bug. He's got to feel better to play better. Rory has to keep it in the short grass. Bryson, and it looks like Brooks Bryson are going to be okay for this week. Bryson's got to think about the Ryder Cup only and not the World Long Drive on Tuesday. And keep it in the short grass. He thinks with the wind he can overpower some holes in the best ball format. I'm not quite sure about that. I would look for them to try to rein Bryson in. But it's easy to predict and it's hard to predict at the same time.
I gotcha. So with all that said, Peter Burns was on our show this morning on one of our other shows here in the station, and he picked Europe to actually win. With all of what you just laid out, what do you anticipate happening? What do you think the outcome could be in all this?
15-13 U.S.
Ooh, all right.
And it's going to be a stressful Sunday, which is why I'm very happy the Jets are 0-2. I have no reason to watch this game against the Broncos.
Yeah.
Traveling mile high? Ugh.
Yeah, that's true. The Broncos are very tough to beat there in September. Before we let you go, you did touch on it there, the Brooks-Bryson feud. We get this viral clip of the two of them look to be talking. Do you read into this at all? What do you think is going to go on with these two?
And Bryson says that there's something fun coming from them soon. An announcement of something. I don't know. I know that Bryson's camp came out and said that they want this feud to end. Mm-hmm. We can do a whole podcast on and whole radio show segment on this feud, and maybe we will come December when there's no golf. But what I will say is I think they can get along for a week, and they won't be paired together. They're going to be far away from each other, when push comes to shove. And I think we're going to be okay on that front.
All right. Sounds good. That'll be another storyline, something to track here this weekend, see if anything comes from it with the Ryder Cup. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Schill, our resident golf expert. Anything else for the Ryder Cup we need to know before we get going here this weekend?
Yes. Two things. One, Maverick McNeely finished second at the Fortinet in Napa. However, he eagled the 18th hole after knowing he was not going to win to finish solo second. That perseverance is what, A, wins you titles down the line, and B, those valuable FedEx Cup points that get you in a better position heading into the playoffs later on. Seems trivial and not a big deal right now. It's a big deal come next August. And NBC is going to try something new. A lot of golf events go commercial-free towards the end. They're going to go commercial-free in the middle of Sunday singles presented by Rolex for 1 hour to cover the most frantic action of Sunday singles. No network has ever attempted this for any team event. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, interesting. We'll see what happens this weekend. We'll break it all down next week. Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert, writes for PGA Magazine. He's on Twitter at Jay Schill, and he joins us every Wednesday to talk golf. Jeremy, appreciate it as always. We'll catch up with you next week.
You got it, brother.
All right, appreciate it. Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert. Yeah, you know, for Brooks and Bryson, and that video was going viral and everything, it's the same thing with Rodgers and the Packers. It's the Mr. and Mrs. Smith scenario. Or pick any movie. It's been done to death in Hollywood where you have two people that need to coexist. They don't like one another, but they try to coexist to reach a common goal. And a lot of times it's like a married couple. And they can't stand each other, but there's some reason they need to stay married or they have to make it work, whatever it is. I mean, kind of to a certain extent like that movie What Happens in Vegas with Ashton Kutcher. And they have to stay together to get the money, the prize money they won at a casino in Vegas. They have to stay together for a certain amount of time. And, you know, they hate each other, but you have to coexist to reach that common goal. It's the same thing for this week. Bryson and Brooks, you know, you're on the same team. You get through this week, and if there is some sort of feud still going on, you worry about that next week. But you Mr. and Mrs. Smith it in the meantime to do what you got to do, even if you may not like one another. Work together to reach that common goal. Coming up. The five best games of the football weekend. We're doing it today. I won't be on air the next 2 days. We got a good weekend of football coming up. So when we come back, our tasty top five on a Wednesday. Next, it's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Thoughts I am thinking are the reason, so I try to remember without talking to myself. Things that I said, or maybe things that I felt about you.
Coming up, the five most interesting games of the college football weekend. I'll let you know in just a few moments here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert, joining us to get ready for the Ryder Cup going on this weekend. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. The Ryder Cup begins on Friday, runs all weekend, and Jeremy will join us next Wednesday, as he always does, to break down whatever happens this weekend. Appreciate the time from Jeremy on Twitter at Jay Schill, and listen to that podcast on demand. You can find the podcast available online at charlestonsportsradio.com as well. Just click on our show page. Or you can also find the podcast through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Or again, search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your apps. Or I should say, listen to your podcasts. Okay, so we usually do the Tasty Top 5 every Friday. I won't be with you the next 2 days. I'm heading out of town. So we have to do the Tasty Top 5 today. But we're going to do it a little bit differently this week because I do think there are enough games of interest this weekend in football. So the Tasty Top 5 is only going to be for college football. And coming up, we'll then look at the NFL slate, and I'll let you know which teams are under the most pressure this Sunday in the NFL, which teams are facing a must-win scenario this weekend, because there's quite a few teams that really need to prove themselves on Sunday. So we'll do that coming up. In the meantime, let me give you the five most interesting games for this Saturday in college football with our Tasty Top 5.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the Tasty Top 5.
I'm tasty.
Number 5.
Since we're doing just college football, I'm including the two local teams. Number 5, I go South Carolina and Kentucky. Kentucky has won 6 of the last 7 against South Carolina. They come into Columbia as a road favorite. And as we open the show talking today, this is the start of the Gamecock season. This is one of the biggest games on the schedule this year, because we're not going to judge South Carolina based off of what they do against Georgia or Texas A&M or Clemson. We know those are games in which they're going to be heavy underdogs, and we don't expect them to win. They'll get blown out. But what we will judge them on are their performances against your Kentuckys and Tennessees and even a Missouri. How do you do in those games with teams that are more on your level? And if you can't beat those teams, right, then it's not a good look. You keep falling further behind in the SEC. So for South Carolina, this is a big game. Kentucky's coming to your building. You've struggled with them lately. This is the first true test. Luke Doty will be starting for the first time. Let's see what we have with this Gamecock team really for the first time this year. I don't take much from the first 3 games. I don't take anything from Eastern Illinois, and I take a little bit from ECU and Georgia, but let's really get a good look at this team with their starting quarterback now at home, supposed to be a sellout Saturday against Kentucky. And on the flip side for Kentucky, you're coming off a game in which, you know, we had high hopes for Kentucky. They beat Missouri, and then they almost laid an egg on Saturday, nearly lost to Chattanooga at home. They were trailing in the fourth quarter. They did not play well. So, you know, once we started pumping those tires for Kentucky, they almost let us all down as they're trying to make a case for being, you know, that second-best team right there at Florida. And then look at this past Saturday. Florida plays that great game against Bama. Kentucky almost embarrassed themselves against Chattanooga. And it's like, oh, yeah, that was a little premature. Well, now they head on the road. First true road game against South Carolina. 5-point spread. Right? Should be a one-possession game. This is number 5 of the games to watch on Saturday. Number 4, again, staying local. I'm including the 2 local teams, Clemson and North Carolina State. This is an interesting game, of course, because you're watching for Clemson's offense. That's what I need to see in this one on Saturday. Now, this is the first true road game for Clemson this year. They go to NC State. They didn't play them last year. Clemson, of course, has dominated this series. They've won 15 of 16 straight up. They've won the last 8. The last couple have been blowouts. But there was that period of time where Dave Doran and NC State was a real thorn in the side of Clemson. And you know, with the way Clemson has played this year, that NC State, they're licking their lips this week. With Clemson coming to their building, and Clemson with that offense looking how it is, right? This is your chance when the king is vulnerable and you want your opportunity. This is your chance to storm the castle. You're having Clemson come to your place. Your defense has played really well this year. That offense hasn't been able to score. Here's your chance, Dave Doran. I imagine NC State will be fired up. And this was a team last year that even though they didn't face Clemson, they did win 8 games. They returned almost the entire team from a year ago. The quarterback is healthy this year after he broke his leg last year. They still won 8 games without him for most of the season. It's a pretty good defense there at NC State. It's going to be an intriguing game on Saturday. I'll give you my official picks next hour. But this is certainly a game to watch because I don't know if it's going to be close. And Clemson's favored by double digits. They probably should win by multiple scores. I don't think we get a repeat of Georgia Tech. I certainly hope not for Clemson's sake. But just the storyline. That the biggest concern for me right now with a championship contender in college football is Clemson's offense. I'm more concerned about Clemson's offense than Ohio State's defense or Alabama's defense or any other part of a team towards the top of college football. So you got to show me something. We're 3 games in here. You haven't shown me anything offensively. Now you go on the road, pretty good NC State defense. You got to show me something that you're moving in the right direction if you're Clemson. That's what I'll be looking out for. Not even necessarily the final score. Obviously, you got to win the game. But how does the offense look? Is this another struggle like Saturday against Georgia Tech? Or will we start to see some glimpses of what they can do on that side of the football? Number 3 of the college football games to watch, Tennessee, Florida. Now, Florida, I haven't even looked. I'm sure they're a heavy favorite. Florida has won 15 of the last 16 games between these two. And since Dan Mullen has gotten to Florida, they averaged to beat Tennessee by 23 points. Tennessee has not won in Gainesville since 2003. So you may wonder, you know, why are you interested in this game? Well, most SEC games are interesting to begin with. But also, I'm looking for the letdown. Remember last year, Florida, everybody was very excited about Florida. They had beaten Georgia. They had just 1 loss on the year. They were, in fact, coming off a win against Tennessee, and they had a letdown against LSU with the whole shoe-throwing incident, and they lost to a freshman quarterback at home when they were favored by 23. And it even though they made it to the SEC championship game, still, you know, kind of altered their season, and it was just a bad look for Florida. And that's the type of thing that people hold against Dan Mullen. Right, that his team is just, they're a little too loose, just like the head coach. Right, they're a little too undisciplined. They slip up in some big moments. because their coach is a little bit of a loose cannon. So here's an opportunity. Even though it was a loss to Alabama, you played really well. Everybody's talking about you this week. It was a moral victory. And now you have Tennessee coming to your building, who you blow out all the time. You've lost to them once in the last 16 years. You're probably favored. I haven't looked. They're probably favored by over 20 points. This is a classic letdown spot. Tennessee's coming there. Josh Heupel, even though he was a UCF guy, right, he's returning to Florida. Heupel is an offensive coach. He's going to want to score points. It could be turned into a shootout with two offensive coaches going up against one another. Tennessee likes to play quickly. They try to catch you off guard. That Florida defense still has some questions. Tennessee will try to score on them on Saturday. So we could see some fireworks. And I'm not telling you that Florida's on upset alert because I like this Florida team, but I am saying I'm interested in this game to see if there is any slip-up in Florida. You're coming off that tough game. A lot of times Alabama can beat you twice. It's such a physical game. You lay it all out there. It's tough. You're getting beat up. You're going up against bigger guys in the trenches. And Tennessee now comes to town where, you know, you're feeling good even in the loss, but feeling good like, man, we almost beat the number one team in the country. Now we have Tennessee. Oh, nothing to worry about there. It's the classic letdown spot. It's number three on my list of games to watch Saturday. Number two of the best college football games this weekend, Notre Dame-Wisconsin. We get two games this week between two ranked teams. This is one of them, Notre Dame-Wisconsin, both top 20 teams. And you get the obvious storyline of Graham Mertz, you know, going up against the former team. Now, Wisconsin, offensively, haven't looked very good. So, Jack Cohn, right, is the one going up against the former team. Graham Mertz in Wisconsin, he hasn't, that offense hasn't looked very good for Wisconsin. They ditched, this is like the Sam Darnold Panthers-Jets game week one, where Sam Darnold has a chance to go up against the team that ditched him, and that other team is struggling. So it's a perfect opportunity to, you know, to prove them wrong, to show them they made the wrong decision, picked the wrong guy, whatever it may be. You know, let me show you how good I am. This game's being played in Chicago, neutral site, two top 20 teams, two good programs, a couple of offenses that haven't been all that great, and you get the storyline, like Darnold, of the quarterback trying to get back at his old team. Number one of the most interesting games to watch, Arkansas, Texas A&M. You get two ranked teams in this matchup, and it's very intriguing. Texas A&M, backup quarterback. Arkansas building that program. Sam Pittman has done a fantastic job. Here is a big test for Arkansas. And they'll have many tests. They're playing at least six ranked teams on the schedule this year. They have the toughest schedule in college football for the second straight year. But Arkansas has played really good football this year. They're ranked. Now let's see how they do against the Texas A&M. And on top of that, you know, in the West behind Alabama, everybody is jostling for that second spot, or at least the opportunity to try to take on Alabama. Ole Miss, LSU probably still believes they can accomplish some things this year. Texas A&M supposed to be that next team. And they're supposed to be a top five team right behind Alabama. And then Arkansas, surprising a lot of people with how well they have played so far this season. But now Arkansas, you've played Rice. Texas was a good win. But you played Rice, Texas, Georgia Southern. This is the best team you'll face to this point this season. It's a neutral site game against Texas A&M. A&M is going with their backup quarterback, so it's a winnable game for Arkansas. Two really good defensive coaches, defensive coordinators matching up with one another. It's the game of the week on Saturday. Texas A&M wants to prove that even with the quarterback injury, they are still that next best team. They can go beat Alabama. They can come out of the SEC. And Arkansas is just trying to prove that they've grown a lot faster than any of us expected. You know, they're 3-0. They're ranked. Had a good first year under Sam Pittman last year. And now here's their chance to go beat Texas A&M. Sam Pittman has done a great job there at Arkansas. But, you know, last year they went 0-6 against ranked teams. They get the win against Texas this year. But, you know, Texas is not as good. We know that. They're not as good as some people thought. This is a real test for Arkansas, a real opportunity to show, yeah, we have arrived. And they have the chance to do it at a neutral site Saturday against Texas A&M. It's the game of the week in college football. That's the Tasty Top 5 for this week in college football alone. When we come back, we'll look at the NFL schedule because there are a handful of teams and players with a lot to prove this Sunday. Who will get it done? We'll come back with that next. It's the Mar Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
There go my baby.
Coming up, the most important games of week three in the NFL. More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I just gave you the tasty top five with the five most compelling matchups in college football on Saturday. And you know, it's interesting, and I don't think it's necessarily good for college football. I get the idea of these special venues and maybe even growing the sport or bigger crowds, neutral sites. But the two biggest games on Saturday are both two neutral site games. One's being played at the Cowboys Stadium, and one's being played at the Chicago Bears Stadium. I think it's better. I think college football is all about those on-campus atmospheres where you have the students there and you have it at one school. I think that's better than these neutral site games. You certainly miss something. I know it's the bigger stadium. It appears like a bigger deal, right? Oh, playing at the Cowboys Stadium. And more people maybe can go to those games, those stadiums. Some of those stadiums may be bigger than the stadiums in which the teams play in. But I just think you kind of lose the essence of college football. And college football has rapidly become more and more like the NFL. But, you know, that's just another way, having the biggest games at these NFL stadiums. I think it's better off on campus. Students are there, right? It's a little more intimate, and you still have all those same traditions, home field traditions and advantages, and I think that's what's best. Now, sometimes it takes that neutral site for the two sides to agree, like, we don't want to go to your place, and we don't want to go to your place. We'll meet in the middle. We'll go play at an NFL stadium and turn it into a big deal, and we'll split the tickets. You know, sometimes it has to work out like that. I just think it's better when the biggest games are actually on campus. Right? Did you watch Saturday night Penn State with the whiteout against Auburn? Like, that's great. In fact, that was, I think, the second most watched game in college football so far this year. Saturday night game, two ranked teams, great home field environment. That's what it's all about. More so than Georgia-Clemson, you know, in Charlotte. And it's like, kind of lose some of that buzz that makes college football so great. When it comes to the NFL, Justin Fields, by the way, as Jeremy alluded to earlier when he joined us, Jeremy Schilling, Justin Fields announced, or the Bears announced, that Justin Fields will be the starter on Sunday. We'll see how that goes. You know, I have not been impressed with Justin Fields so far, whether it was the preseason or either when he came in this past Sunday to replace Andy Dalton, and now he goes on the road to Cleveland. And the Browns are a 7-point favorite. That number, I think, has actually come down after the news. I think the Browns were favored by, I think last night I saw, about 8. So Bears-Browns Sunday, Justin Fields' debut. But what about the teams that have something to prove? Who have the biggest games and matchups in Week 3? We won't do another full, you know, tasty top five. Instead, I'll just run through a couple of teams where Week 3 is very crucial. And it begins with my team, the Minnesota Vikings. 0-2 at home, and a good Seattle team's coming to town. The Seahawks are coming off a loss. A loss that they let slip away. They were up 15 at home in the second half and lost that game. So you know the Seahawks are going to be upset. The Vikings have lost 2 games on field goals. They're now at home for the first time. Home opener. First time they'll have a full stadium there in 2 years. 0-2 of their very good team at home. They're also a home dog. That's a big game for both those teams. Because for Seattle, in that division, you cannot afford to cough up games like they did last week. You can't fall behind in that good of a division. And for the Vikings, if you begin 0-3, right now you're in big trouble. If you win on Sunday and you beat a good team in Seattle, you can write off those other two games. Say, hey, they're both on the road. We lost on a last-second field goal. We were inches away from winning. We could easily be 3-0. You could sell yourself on that idea. We just beat Seattle. We know we're a good team. But if you come out and you lose to Seattle, and the Vikings always struggle with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson in his career, he may be undefeated against the Vikings, and they play almost every year the way the schedule works out. Right? But if you lose to them and it doesn't come down to a last-second field goal, then you start losing the team. You can only handle so much, even as a professional football player, you can only handle so much frustration and heartbreak before you start viewing things a little differently. The Packers, even though they won, this is a big game for Green Bay Sunday Night Football against the 49ers. Because we've seen a terrible performance week one, good enough performance week two. I don't think it was great. It was good enough. So now it's like, okay, well, which one is Green Bay? Is this going to be the Packers moving forward, or are they going to struggle again somewhat like week one? And they go up against San Francisco, which has been the worst matchup for them in the NFC during these current coaching staffs. This is the team that the Packers have struggled with the most with San Francisco. We just saw the Lions. Jared Goff played well against that defense. Jameis Winston tore up that defense. Now you go up against this Niners team in San Francisco, or technically Santa Clara, and you know with the way that they can run the football and Jimmy Garoppolo and that good offensive line. Forget even the Packers' offense. This may be a bigger concern for their defense. While you have two 2-0 teams, the Buccaneers-Rams is the biggest game of the Sunday. And they're the two best teams in the NFC. We touched on this earlier this hour. This is the big prove-it game for Matt Stafford. The first on his schedule with the Rams. This number, by the way, has gone up. The Rams are only a bigger underdog now than at any point earlier this week. This is your chance. You're an underdog at home. People are doubting you. You're at home against the Buccaneers, the defending Super Bowl champs. Let's see how well Stafford plays in a big spot like this. Stafford has lost the 10 biggest games of his career. 0-3 in the playoffs, 0-7 in games with playoff implications. This doesn't have playoff implications just yet. It's only week 3, but we know this is, you know, this is like an early Super Bowl. This is huge for the Rams. Let's see how Stafford does. That's why I trust Tom Brady in that moment more than I do Matt Stafford. And then as you look at other 0-2 teams, we have the Falcons, Giants, both 0-2 playing in New Jersey on Sunday. It's a must-win for both teams. Matt Ryan earlier or yesterday was talking about he still believes, he still expects the Falcons to play deep into January. Well, if that's the case, you better win on Sunday. And this is one of those opportunities for both these teams. They're both 0-2. And it's like, okay, we're playing two winless teams. One of us has to win. One of us is going to get right here. Who's it going to be, us or you? The Falcons, they're on the road against the Giants. The Giants have extra time to get ready. The Giants have looked much better than the Falcons this year. The Falcons have looked like the worst team in the league. In fact, they have the worst point differential. So, Atlanta, if you want to accomplish anything, if Matt Ryan wants to tell me that the Falcons are going to make it to the playoffs still this year, okay, go out and win against the Giants on Sunday. They haven't won either. Let's see. And lastly, the last couple ones, the Colts are 0-2. They go to the Titans, two teams we believe will battle for that division. Well, the Colts are winless right now and may not have Carson Wentz on Sunday. You lose that game, suddenly you're 0-3. You've already lost to the Titans. Who knows when Wentz may come back if he doesn't play this week. The Colts may be buried already 3 weeks in. And the last big game, Chargers-Chiefs, both 1-1. Justin Herbert on the road in Kansas City, a big test for him against what we still believe is the top team in that division, regardless of what the standings look like 2 weeks in. I think the Chargers and the Chiefs are two of the best teams in the AFC. But they both let a game slip away this past week. They both blew games they should have won. And so now they're both being a little hungry. Mahomes just lost in September for the first time in his career. This is new to him. He blew an 11-point lead. We're not used to the Chiefs doing that. Usually they erase the 11-point deficits. They're on the wrong side of that this week. Now they're at home against the Chargers. I could see it being a statement game for the Chiefs, but I could also see the Chargers, because I don't think the Chargers are too far behind the Chiefs. I could see this becoming some sort of instant classic. The Chiefs, by the way, are favored by 7. That seems way too high to me. But maybe not. Maybe the Chiefs come out and lay it on the Chargers to make up for what we saw on Sunday night. I don't know how many games I just gave you. Maybe 5. But those are the most interesting games or the biggest storylines, the teams with the most pressure and the most to prove, week 3 this Sunday in the NFL. We'll wrap up hour 2 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour 2 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Let's talk in the last segment about how the college football games should be played on campus, the biggest games in college football. Brad on Twitter said, is it really a whiteout in regards to the Penn State-Auburn game? Is it really a whiteout when Penn State played in their Navy jerseys? Yeah, it's a good point. Right? Auburn was wearing the all-white. And Penn State was wearing, now, of course, in football, the road team wears all white. Maybe that's the idea. You want to white them out. They're wearing white. You want to white them out. It's like when you go play the Tampa Bay Rays at Tropicana Field and the pop-ups, you can't see the pop-ups in the white roof or like the beige ceiling. Same idea. When Bo Nix is dropping back to throw, his play, it's like camouflage. His players in all white blend right in with the crowd wearing all white. You have no idea. Where's my receiver? I can't see him. But it is, yeah, I mean, it's a whiteout, and Penn State doesn't even, the visiting team wears those colors. Penn State does not.
So it's all almost like a real whiteout you get in the snow.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, you can't see him. Where's my guy? He disappeared. I lost him. You can only see the Penn State players because of the Navy jerseys they're wearing with all the crowd wearing the white shirts. By the way, as mentioned, you know, yesterday was the anniversary of Hurricane Hugo here in the Lowcountry. I saw this from Lance Hansen online, who played for the Citadel back then. But the Citadel beat Navy up in their place in Maryland, came home to see all the destruction that it caused, and voted to stay on campus, the evacuated campus, and help with the cleanup. And Lance posted the newspaper clippings from a story that was written about it in the Atlanta Journal and Constitution. And as I went back to look up that season, I saw that they played their next couple of games. They had to play them at Williams-Brice in Columbia against South Carolina State and Western Carolina. So, looking back on the Citadel on the anniversary of that hurricane all those years ago. Hour three next.